You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kalen Carr, Matt Doyle. What's up? How's it going? I saw Kalen, you're road tripping. It looks like exposed brick. I'm going to guess that's Brooklyn. Are you or are you not back in your old confines?
I have made it back. Happy to report the, I don't know for how long I'm going to be here, but I had to at least touch base, you know?
What's the decision-making process for how long you'll be back in New York?
I think really how long this stream goes. Like if this Extra Time podcast goes longer than 2 hours, we're moving. Like we might just hop right back in the car and get out of here. Cause the apartment, as you can tell. Nice, tidy, but not the biggest.
I like the mirror. I dig that. We don't see the girlfriend, so maybe you pushed her out for some coffee during this, but I'll make sure we end. I'll make sure we end at an hour 59. That way you're here, you're
Doyle's
stuck with
cat
us.
And Nicola. It's a thing.
Yeah, set your watch by those. All right, let's get into it. Today we've got some big guests. We've got Paxton Aronson and Brendan Aronson, brothers, homegrowns. They'll be here. We'll talk about MLS next, what that means for Major League Soccer. We're going to take you through the entire weekend. From the LA Galaxy winning again to Sebastian Blanco being out. We don't know how long for Columbus Crew atop the East. One of the best starts of all time. But what does it mean? Because they play FC Cincinnati, who may not score a goal in the next calendar month. They haven't in the last calendar month, basically. Blas Matuidi made his debut. We had the first start of the year as well for Emmanuel Reynoso. We've got a lot to talk about. But first, I got to go on the same rant I've been on for like 8 different times on this show. And it feels like deja vu. It feels like Groundhog Day. It feels like the same old feel free to bleep that for me, Anders, in the post-production here. The National Soccer Hall of Fame induction news came out, and it's the same news we always hear, which is nobody gets into the National Soccer Hall of Fame, and it's basically a big waste of our time because we're not actually celebrating any soccer history through this process right now. Congratulations does go, and it is rightful, to Carlos Bocanegra. He is the only person in the player category or any category, no builders, no veterans this year, to get into the National Soccer Hall of Fame. That's either the fourth or the fifth. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. Time in the last 6 years when just one player got in. Hope Solo, probably the best goalkeeper the women's game has ever seen. One of the best goalkeepers game has ever seen. Fine. I've slow played that. She is the best keeper in the history of the women's game. And one of the best keepers all time to play the game of soccer did not get 2/3 of the vote. 57%. You have to have 2/3 to get in. This is from the same group of voters who 20%, 1/5, ignored Abby Wambach in her first year. Just the best international goal scorer of all time. I mean, it is ridiculous. Steve Cherundolo didn't get in. Shannon Box didn't get in. Kate Markgraff didn't get in. Jaime Moreno didn't get in. Steve Ralston didn't get in. I can get through like 10 people that didn't get in. And the reason for this is because the process is broken. We know the process is broken. The reason for this is because the voters, it's a dereliction of their duties. Like some of the news coming out of this, and this is from Stephen Goff, the Washington Post. He talked to folks. I've talked to folks too who've corroborated this. The voting went from 35% a couple years ago to 80% now. That's good. But there are a lot of people that are putting one name on their ballot of 10 in a system in which you have to have a certain number of people on the ballot. So like of all the votes, 2/3 have to have you on a ballot. So if you only put one name, you're killing the process. Those people are disrespecting our history, and they're a part of our history. It's ridiculous. There have to be some changes. Here are the two that I would suggest just off the jump. All ballots are now public. National Soccer Hall of Fame Board of Directors, you need to fix this. All ballots have to be public. You have to be able to put your name next to it and be proud of it. Otherwise, we get to heckle and banter you. It can't be anonymous. Baseball does not do it anonymous anymore. In 2018, they made it all public. National football in Canton, they have at least 4, at most 8 to get in. They actually celebrate something. The Basketball Hall of Fame has 9 this year. And the other thing is, if you don't vote, if you're one of the 20% or whatever it is, and if you fail to do that in 2 years, you lose your ballot. or we change the process completely and we purge the voter rolls. Like, this is, it's absurd. It's absurd. I can't do this over and over and over again. Everybody should be ranting about this today. We've done this before. It's just, it baffles me that we've decided that Steve Cherundolo, a guy who is a legend at a club in the Bundesliga, is a best 11 player for the U.S. national team, can't be in the National Soccer Hall of Fame. Like, it's petty. It's ridiculous. The voters, I hear that it's a lot of the Hall of Fame inductees that are part of this problem are failing us. And I know a lot of people will be like, ah, it's a Hall of Fame, I don't care. But like, that's our whole problem. We don't celebrate our history. We don't recognize who built this thing. We don't recognize the different eras. We don't talk about it. So now this process is not a who is a Hall of Famer. It's what is this process and why it's broken. It's the wrong conversation to be having. I'll just shout out. I got the board members right here. Dr. Bob, it's a five person board. Dr. Bob, John Mata, Cindy Parvo-Cohn, Kobe Jones, Dan Flynn. Word on the street is they're going to examine this and probably make changes. Make the change. Do something. This cannot continue in its current iteration because it's not doing anything. We're not celebrating anyone. And I felt much more like I had a good rundown to that. And then I just started ranting because my blood pressure goes up the moment I see this email release come in. And I'm just like, I know it's happening. I knew it was going to happen. I wrote a column when I put in my ballot. I said, I hope the rest of you idiots get this right. And they didn't again. So end rant.
I respect that you still care enough, because I've been involved in U.S. soccer in one level or another, literally since, you know, starting as a fan in 1986. So we're into decade number four of this, and I don't care about the Hall of Fame anymore because they have been so derelict in preserving and highlighting our history. And they've been so derelict in creating a thread between the present day and the old NASL days and the pre-NASL days, to the point where I don't care. I didn't even know this was happening, because it doesn't, like, they, if Abby Wambach is not a universal, if she's not a unanimous inductee into the Hall of Fame, then you have done things so poorly that I cannot be bothered to care about your product. And if Hope Solo is not a first ballot Hall of Famer for whatever Hope Solo is off the field, and we know that she is kind of a pill, she is the greatest women's national. She is the greatest women's goalie of all time. She is the best there has ever been at that position by miles. And she's not a Hall of Famer. And Steve Cherundolo, as you said, and then there's the, you know, internecine battle between the old NASL guys who hold a preponderance of votes versus honoring MLS's history. Like, Jaime Moreno is the winningest player in MLS history, 12 major trophies, was a, you know, all-star caliber player for more than a decade. Steve Ralston, Brad Davis, and on down the list. It is so factional and political. And as you said, Weeby, it is broken to the point where, like, I can't spend any emotion actually caring about this. That is the most, right, the last 90 seconds, that's the most I've cared about the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame in a decade.
But part of the way you build interest in it is you make it an exciting class, right?
Yes. Like
you involve players from both the men's side, the women's game, you get, and for the players themselves, it's like, it's kind of lonely. Boca goes up there and is like, wow, what an incredible honor. And he's joining a fantastic group. But you want to go in with a class, right? Like, I think it's much more compelling if you walk in and you look over and you see Shannon Box, or you see Steve Ralston, or you see some of these other names, Hope Solo, around you, and you say, wow, the 2020 class, like, it builds some excitement, some energy around it. And I don't know. I mean, acknowledging, like you're saying, Weeby, that history. I got into the Cal Athletics Hall of Fame. I went in with the 1966 men's crew team, right? And these guys go to, you know, all of the Cal football games and still tailgate. And I got to tailgate with these guys and get to hear their stories of being in Berkeley in the 60s and rowing crew and you know, all the things they're doing. And Dana Vollmer, who was an 8-time medalist, it made my thing, she was a swimmer, it made my, you know, honor much more I felt it a lot more because I saw the scope of history. I understood what I was walking into, and I got to share it with some people. And look, that should happen for U.S. soccer as well. And you should see, we have such a great community. We have so many people that have contributed to the game. And part of the honor is that, yes, it is exclusive. That's what a Hall of Fame is. But there's a line, right? When you just look up and it's just one person, that's just, I mean, it's it doesn't feel the same. I can't speak to how it feels, but I think as far as you're just trying to create interest or energy around it, to Doyle's point, like, create a great class, create a group of people that you get to see going together each year after year after year, and it builds.
And by the way, you have players that deserve it. You have a preponderance of players that deserve it. And the reason we have a huge pool of players that deserve it is because nobody ever gets in. We've wasted like a decade or more just putting one person in when we had all these people. And the crazy thing to me, and I don't know if I said it before, is like, these are the people that should be celebrating American soccer history, culture, progress more than anybody else, who were part of building it. And it's more petty than it is celebratory. And that is a problem. We should be having a weekend every year that, like you see at Canton or in baseball, where people go to Frisco. And by the way, all the millions of dollars that were spent on that, it's from all, Dave, you've been there. You said it was awesome. Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah, I've been too.
It's like, cool. Create a weekend. Create a party. Create a reason for us to talk about this. One,
right? They have a concert. Then you have FC Dallas play. Obviously, this year will be different. But to Kalen's point, to your point, to everyone's point is, if you have a large class where there's a splash and it's exciting because you're fans of these people, because that's why people go to baseball and the NFL and the NBA, is they're MJ fans. They want to go. Me and my friend wants to go celebrate Curtis Martin because we loved him as kids. And then you go because they
class get reference.
That's why you go. And that hasn't happened. And because that hasn't happened, it hasn't brought the level of notoriety to the under-the-radar people who are in the Hall of Fame, who deserve to be noticed more. And it's almost hurting themselves, right? If you don't have Pope Solo and Kobe Jones, and obviously Kobe Jones in there, but whoever's coming in next to come in and create like interest around it and bring people there, then you go there and you learn about the people who were really killing themselves for the game in the early 80s. The people who are carrying the NASL, the people who played in the 1950 World Cup, the women who went to the first ever 1991 World Cup. All of those things you learn about because you're coming because of the top little names that you know. And that doesn't happen if those players aren't even in. And now we're here with Weeby yelling in his Brooklyn apartment.
Yeah. And looking at myself, as you said, Doyle, in the mirror and saying, like, are you dumb? You knew this was going to happen. Like, why waste your emotions on this? And again, it goes back to the process. That is part of the problem. The voters are a huge part of the problem. And the National Soccer Hall of Fame Board of Directors has to make this change for themselves, for the National Soccer Hall of Fame, and for our sport. Like, you have to have that historical thread, as you guys are all saying, to properly appreciate the present. And right now, we're just not doing either. And it's wrong.
Do you think that you should only vote in the category that you come out of? Should it be that former MLS players vote for MLS players, that former women's national team players vote?
We can't actually answer that until the votes are public.
Yeah.
Because we have to take a look at where the vote, what's going on with who is only voting for one person, who is refusing to vote for women's players, who is refusing to vote for MLS players, who's voting for many. Like, we have to take a look at
that. Or who's just being a complete clown and putting one name on their ballot.
Yeah.
Like, that's some clown. You know what the next word is.
I've got a question. I don't even understand that. Why would somebody do that, I guess?
I'm trying to understand that myself. There? They've decided that it needs to be so exclusive that only one person deserves. I don't know, which is because that's not the case. If you look back in time at other classes before sort of the modern era, there were plenty of people getting in. There's a lot of people from the NASL days that have resumes that pale in comparison to Jaime Moreno and Steve Ralston, et cetera. Anyway, we've wasted enough time on this. Go pressure people, man.
One more thing real quick. This is why every MLS team should employ their own team historian. Because every MLS team has a distinct and meaningful history, and we are going to lose that. We are going to lose that if teams don't take it seriously themselves and start codifying it and start treating it with the respect that it deserves.
And I just found out that in 2015, I was at Yankee Stadium. Doyle was the one wearing the tradition NYCFC jersey year one.
Nice.
It's all about history, baby.
Nice. And look, if you need a starting point, MLS historians, I got a good podcast for you. I think they did like Mount Rushmore's for every single MLS team. It's like a real quick way for you to catch up on what may have happened in that club's history. Neither here nor there. All right, let's get to the weekend. There's plenty to talk about. Right after we recorded our show last week, Chris Armas was fired by the New York Red Bulls. You remember he took over for Jesse Marsh and such an era of success for the club. He was 29, 21, and 11 in three seasons with the Red Bulls. Of course, they lost that 2018 team that was so, so good to Atlanta in the playoffs. A lot of departures. This is not the same team that he took over. The quality is not the same. You can argue about why that is. Tyler Adams, obviously gone. Rebel Leipzig, BWP, let him go. Luis Robles to Miami, he goes. Kamar Lawrence sold to Belgium. Michael Murillo, same spot for him. Anderlecht and Alex Muil, which producer Anders put on this list. And now I may think he was like trolling me with that. Love me some Alex Muil, but to Nashville, obviously, this year. Dave, what now? I mean, they have an interim manager, but I think they'll make a different decision down the line. Kevin Thelwell, this is his first big decision, I would say, as the quote-unquote head of sport. They brought him over from Wolves. He's now running the game.
He brought in a DP in Drew Yearwood. Yeah.
Okay.
So I would just say, before we go to what's next, I think when you look at this decision, there's a few things that happen. One, every sports team in the world, if you have someone come in on top with a current structure below them, it's always going to change. Every GM wants their own coach. Every TD wants their own coach. That's always the way it works. So it was always going to be a little difficult for Chris Armas. The hope was that the wider body of things with the Red Bull global family would probably insulate you from that. And I think Ralf Rangnick leaving his position with global Red Bull ended up shifting that, because that was someone who, you see what Red Bulls do on a soccer field with trusting young players, wanting to develop young players at Leipzig, Salzburg, and here. That's the way they feel about people. That's why Jesse Marsh was a part of that organization, got his UEFA license, was the assistant coach for Leipzig, now coaches for Salzburg, because they believed in him as a soccer mind and as a leader, and they thought they could develop him. And I think they had a similar feeling about Chris Armas, and it has been rocky since it started for him. A lot of that has gone to the roster construction and not to Chris Armas as a coach, and I think they would have stuck with him for longer. But Kevin Thilwell wants his guy. He wants to change things. He also is hyper-focused on this. Global Red Bull has how many teams, how many academies, things going on. Kevin Thilwell's coming here to just run New York Red Bulls. And so he's going to do it his way. So I think it's unfortunate, because I think all of us can say he's a great soccer mind, Chris Armas, and he's a great person. He was a good person to have. He'll be back in MLS when he wants to be. I know he very much loves living on Long Island. Shout out to Strong Island. But whenever he's ready and wants to go somewhere else, every team will be clamoring for him. But I think it's unfortunate the timing for him. Just from what Jesse Marsh accomplished, the way they've shifted the roster since he's taken over, and the way the bigger picture went around. But the performances are bad. I don't think it's just down to the results. I think there's been a lack of interest. There's been a lack of ability to just push games and look like they're committed over the course of the last few months. And I think that's really what did him in the end.
I don't disagree with that. And I think that you could even look back to 2019 and see the seeds of that inability to push games. Like they weren't blowing teams out like they had in 2018 and even parts of 2017 and obviously back to 2015. Chris Armas was talking about coming in with a plan B and wanting to be able to use the ball a little bit more. And whenever they tried that, they left the door open. And so they gave up 22 points from leading positions last year, which was fifth worst in the league. And if you just cut that in half, they're at 59 points and they're hosting that playoff game. And that playoff game, by the way, against the Union, they were up 2-0. They were up 3-1. They lost 4-3. So that regular season failure continued into the postseason. But underpinning all of this is that when Jesse Marsh came in 2015 and changed the way the Red Bulls play, like, that was the first truly modern press that we saw in MLS. They were just doing it differently than anyone else. And whatever perceived talent gap there was between the Red Bulls and the rest of the league was kind of papered over by the ability to play a vastly different system and win those battles and change where on the field the game was played. But also, there wasn't that much of a gap between the Red Bulls and the very best teams in the league. They had top five players at multiple positions. Sasha was a top five attacking midfielder at that point. Obviously, Bradley Wright Phillips was a top five, if not top two, center forward at that point. Dax McCarty in his prime was at the same level as Ozzie Alonso and Diego Chara and Kyle Bett. He was the best D mid in the league. And you went from Sasha to Kaku, and you went from Dax to Tyler Adams. There were other players in, I mean, Luis Robles in his prime was a contender for goalkeeper of the year every single year. They had Matt Miazga. 2 years later, they developed Aaron Long. So the talent level during that run from 2015 to 2018 was higher than it is right now in 2020. I think if you look at that roster, I don't see a single top five player at a single position. Maybe if Aaron Long was healthy and playing like he had been, but Aaron Long is not the first player in the history of the world or the history of MLS to have a dream move to an English Premier League team put on the table for him, and the team says no, and his form goes in the tank. We saw that from Michael Murillo last year as well. Michael Murillo is gone now. Kaku, I mean, I lay Kaku's regression as a player at Chris Armas. I do think that he used him incorrectly. He wasn't able to motivate him. So, like, that is the one where you look at, okay, Chris Armas didn't do it right. And I think that is why Chris Armas paid with his job. But Chris Armas is not the only person at fault here. The front office, ownership, at least equal in terms of fault, if not more so than Chris Armas. And Red Bull as a whole, like Kevin Thelwell, it's on him now. He has to fix this. He was brought here to fix this. He was brought here to fix the academy. And they've been getting, you know, their behinds kicked by NYCFC in terms of recruiting for the last 5 or 6 years. He has to fix the pipeline again. He has to fix the first team. And it is a massive project now, because that great run that the Red Bulls had for really most of last decade, that is officially over. And it has to be a new era, and the fans are going to have expectations, and they're right to.
Caitlin, when you think about the future of this club, I mean, there's a lot wrapped up in what Doyle just said. I mean, that sounds like basically every part of your house is either a little bit messy or in disrepair, and you got to like be real honest with yourself and fix it. When you just look at this club in a big picture, where they were, where they are now, where maybe they want to go, what stands out to you? Like, what would you focus on? Or is there something you can focus on?
Well, I would say I think things could get worse before they get better for Red Bull. And I agree with most everything that Doyle said, except for the part on Kaku and Armas. I played with Armas and I played for Armas when he was an assistant coach for the Fire. And if he can't motivate you, if you can't get motivated by Chris Armas, or you can't get like he doesn't get the best out of you. Now, maybe was he used in the correct positions at times, or I think they're trying to find a place where they could wake him up. But ultimately, I think that falls on the player himself. And then I just think when you look at this club and like what they've been able to do with the continued drop in talent, I mean, what more do you want? What are you expecting when you continue to go from one level down to the next, to the next, to the next, and then you move on from that talent? Like, what are you expecting? This is a team that's consistently in the playoffs. You can mark that down every year. And even with a talent gap, and yes, the press system team started to figure that out. They had to adjust. But ultimately, you need some players to be able to make that type of adjustment, right? Like, because that's where the talent gap, they figured they could make up for it, where they said, as long as we have it straight up the spine and some great attacking players that can get forward on the wings, then we can have guys that can just make it hard, make it difficult for teams. And that's where we can kind of play a little bit in those margins where we don't have to spend as much as other clubs, and we can move away from this sort of big money Thierry Henry type signing, Tim Cahill, Rafa Marquez, and we can adjust and get through that because we have a bunch of hardworking guys that play this system. And then, yeah, that falls apart, but you need pieces still, right? So it can't just be the Red Bull 2 players that have come up, and every once in a while one hits and becomes, you know, a Champions League footballer. Like that's great when it happens, and it's amazing that it happened. And that's a testament to their system as well. But it can't just be that. Like, you have to be out, especially now, and especially in a place like New York City, you have to give a little bit more. And I just don't think Armas had the tools. I don't think he was given the tools to be able to make this team what it should be. And even still, they were a consistent playoff team, which if you're going to take that route, to me, should be enough. Give the guy some time, continue to play, sign a striker, please. And then you have some hardworking guys coming off the bench that can push them forward. But I mean, yeah, it continued to drop. And I think, you know, I feel for Armas, because I know he wanted to do the right thing for the club. And I think he has left a big imprint on that club. When you look at the success that's come through and the players that have gone on and had those types of success in other places, he's been a big part of what they've done, along with CJ Brown as well. So, yeah, disappointed. I'm disappointed by the decision. Yeah. And I worry that if you're a Red Bull fan, that, look, as long as those factors, those dynamics don't change, why would you expect the results to be any different?
Yeah, look, I think there's an element here of like what happened in the last few years. And it wasn't just in Armas' time. There was some of this in Marsh's time, where you're signing DPs on loan that have no future with the club, where you made signings on those, not fringes, but you made the Lloyd Sam signings. You made the Relladinho signings in addition to the core that you were talking about, Doyle. And those signings helped you get over the top. Well, those signings haven't been there, and the style of play hasn't been as effective. And now Chris Armas is basically, he's the coach that comes in off the beloved guy, and he was the assistant, and now he has to step in, and people expect one thing. And Red Bull's world at that time, from 2015 to 2018, 19, and even maybe not so much now, but before, the expectation was, you're going to be the top of the East. We're going to go after the MLS Cup that we've never captured. So the expectations were high, and I think the resources were not matching at times, and now he's paid with his job. But now Kevin Thelwell, to your point, Doyle, has to do something comprehensive. And we'll see what that is. But this is another big step and another sort of like club icon gone, because it's not just Chris, it's also CJ Brown. Both of them are gone now.
I would just throw in, on a micro level, I've never really spoken with him, but I know people in the Red Bull organization for the last 2 years speak very highly of Bradley Carnell, who took over as the interim manager. On Sunday, he was an assistant for Chris Armas and Jesse Marsh before that, originally from South Africa, played in Germany for a while. I know he's interviewed for head coaching positions over the last 2 years in Europe. So it's a desire of his. And I think we all know, when you're around the staff, there's one guy that wants to be a head coach and everyone else kind of is happy being assistant coaches or goalkeeper coaches, whatever they do. He was a guy who wants something like this. He's got great soccer ideas. Apparently, he's really well organized, professional. So I think he's going to get a legitimate shot over the rest of this season to fill in as interim and prove that he can be the head guy. Obviously, everyone's asking me about John Wolanek, who's still coaching Red Bull 2, the best team in the world, for this time. And I don't even know. No one really knows moving a coach from USL to MLS, because you can't really move players right now. They have to quarantine. There's different testing levels. So there was a lot of confusion around that. But either way, I think Bradley Carnell is a guy that's valued and would have been given that shot anyway. And it's probably going to be his to lose to an extent, even if they go out and do an external search.
We did not talk about the result.
Yeah, didn't do a great job to start it off.
Yeah, the result this weekend was pretty poor against the Union. 3-0 winners were Philadelphia. And that kind of tells you a story. It tells you a story about how sort of the power has shifted in the Eastern Conference, because it used to be Philly that were beating their head against the door and the Red Bulls that were just kind of mopping them up. And it felt like a pretty good mopping this week for the Union. Let's talk about the Galaxy, who just, you know, El Trafico, baby. That's their time. The Shrine is working. I got W4 right here sitting on my desk. This is a nice piece of MLS history. If they want to put this in the National Soccer Hall of Fame, they can. But yeah, 5-0 aggregate the last two games in El Trafico for the Galaxy. Sebastian Legette, they love the boy, is out here throwing down bicycle kicks. Might be the most on-form player in the entire league. 4-0 since the restart are the Galaxy. When we basically had Dennis DeClosa on and we're like, what the hell are you guys doing? What's going on here? And he said, this is not our standard. So every GM in the league, open invite, you want to come on this show, results will follow. yeah, look, this is how you wanted it to happen. They're doing it without Chicharito too. Like, it's all setting up perfectly. Their form is rising. Chicharito is coming back. The chances that maybe Ethan Zubak isn't up to at this point, maybe Chicharito finishes that instead of just whipping it into his head and like four defenders. Now they're playing real soccer. Christian Pavone is an MVP candidate. This is working. Julian Araujo's out here like drawing the red mist from Mark Anthony Kay, which he told us basically on the show that he was going to do. Yeah, this, you know, the Shrine is rolling. Everything's working. The league is better when the Galaxy are good, and I won't hear otherwise. I won't hear otherwise. Exactly. Exactly.
Who are we to disagree with the least Galaxy fan in this entire show right now on this call. Weeby's never rooted for them a day in his life. He's never wanted them to be better than they are. And right now he's a little upset, but he'll take
I'm still waiting for my Chicharito and Jonah like votive candles to come in. But when they do, it's going to get even better. It's going to get even what changes when Chicharito gets into this team, if anything?
Well, first, let's just start with saying I think a big shift or the big shift has been in the back and the fact that they're able to keep clean sheets, which even if you look at El Tráfico's past and the history of this, that was never the case, right? It was like even the games Galaxy, I think, won were like 3-2 or 5-2.
I don't know. Pick a scoreline. Anything is believable here.
Yeah, there's basically
5-3, 6-1. Like it's all
5-3. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and even in the El Tráficos that of late, at times the Galaxy have like, you know, they've looked pretty comfortable to be able to, that you could, you would bet on them to see it out once they took the lead. And I think they've been a lot more solid defensively. And then on set pieces, I think this team is strong. And there was the clever little play where Legette kind of, everybody crashes the box and Legette kind of loops around, which is straight off of Dom Kinnear playbook, by the way. A lot of teams have used that one. It's not magic or sorcery there, but it worked really well there. And I do think, to your question, Weeby, when you look at the way that they play, they're playing pretty good football. They're keeping the ball. They're playing around, and Legette has been a huge reason of that, but Pavone as well. And when you talk about Ethan Zubac, a lot of the things that he does are things that Chicharito does. So when he eventually gets fit, and now they have a little bit of a leeway to allow him to get fit and work his way into the side, I think they can continue this. I mean, what is it? They've got four straight wins, so all the momentum is there. There's no need to mess things up. You just kind of keep going with what you got, and eventually Chicharito comes into the team.
This is strange.
So I said this last.
Hold on, this is strange. I got to read this because Kalen just praised the Galaxy. We had somebody coming in saying anonymous in the text line, quote, can you guys call it like it is, Mr. Kalen Carr, which is a very respectful way to refer to you, Kalen. Can't say anything positive about the Galaxy. He speaks so highly of that other team and not even crickets can be heard from him. He did want to thank, he wanted to thank me for the shrine. So this person is, they've just gotten their come up.
So let's get this straight. So he's not saying I'm saying anything, he's not taking issue with something I've said negative. He's just saying, why am I not praising his team?
Yeah, look, it's like it's the juxtaposition of one of us having a shrine and you talking about Carlos Vela when Carlos Vela was the best team in the history of the league for an entire season. But yeah, it is what it is.
Bizarre. Where were you, I don't know how to respond.
Where were you going? Where were you going, Dave?
I was just going to say, Kalen said that Zubac does similar things to Chicharito, and I think I said it on the show last week. He attempts to do similar things to it. Most of them don't come off, and when they do, it'll be really fun to watch.
Chicharito should obviously help. Getting Jonathan Dos Santos should obviously help. But Kalen's right. This starts in defense. The Galaxy are just a much more compact and much less error-prone team. And a big part of it, like, this is the first time they've ever produced something from Los Dos. Nick DePue has been, like, a borderline revelation. I mean, certainly compared to Giancarlo Gonzalez. And if you're not making massive mistakes every single game, you have the ability to weather the type of first half that they had against LAFC, because the Galaxy didn't come out and dominate this game for 90 minutes. They were outshot 14-1 in that first half. And in years past or in months past, if they were dominated like that, they were going to turn off, they were going to break down, and they were going to give up three goals, and then they were going to quit in the second half. We saw it in El Tráfico in July in Orlando. The difference now is that these guys aren't making that mistakes. They've had personnel upgrades. They're competing. And then in attack, like, yes, Legette is playing the best club soccer of his entire life. Pavone is playing at an MVP level. But all of this comes down to, like, oh, we're not just going to cross the ball 30 times a game to nobody. Like, this comes down to, like, we have a lot of skilled players, and, like, their final third pattern play isn't as, like, elite as what we saw out of LAFC last year or what we've seen out of Toronto or anything like that. But they are putting their guys into spots where they can use the ball, where they can use their talent. And when you have good players in good spots, especially against a backline as disorganized as LAFC's is right now, you're going to score goals.
It feels to me like this is where Dennis DeCosta is on telling us where he wants to take the Galaxy. Like, these are all accumulation of like four or five little steps that they needed to take to get there, whether it be the backline and organization deciding on center backs and jettisoning the guys who are not getting it done, or the fact that Araujo is getting a ton of time right now, that they have a team that actually does reflect a little bit some of the efforts that they put in with USL2 and the academy. Even if Ethan Zubac is not the answer, the fact that they're getting results with that tells you that at least something is a little bit better than it used to be. And then the tactics got right. It's like all these little ticks are going to the right place, and they're doing it without Chicharito. And that's ultimately the Galaxy legacy, which is we have the biggest players and we win with the biggest players. Like, they have to get back to that, but Dennis DeCosta has to get them there with all those other little pieces that we always talk about that we're missing, whether it's the academy or development or making the right signing sort of in the middle that just haven't been happening over the last 3-4 years. So big win for them. Also, the digital team is always winning. Can we just say that? That cameo video is maybe the best piece of like clapback content I've ever seen. I love...
What do you call it? Hyper-authentic?
I would call it the most hyper-authentic thing I've ever seen. I loved Mark Anthony Kay thanking like David, Jonathan, and Joe for dominating LA and just...
Are you guys on Cameo?
I'm not, but now I want to get on it. I want people to troll me in that exact same way. I would love to see me thanking... You know, we should get you on there so we can get these anonymous trolls that are hitting you up in the comment section on YouTube and otherwise.
I would highly recommend going through the soccer category of Cameo. You will see some interesting numbers.
How much do we have to pay for like 10 seconds? Could we go and...
It depends on who you want. And it's really interesting to see how people value themselves.
Interesting.
There are a lot of MLS or USL players on there.
Yeah, any bright ideas you have with Cameo, we are all ears. If the price is right, I'm already on this. We're making something happen with this. We're trolling somebody. I don't know who. Is it Dave, do you know if Adrian Heath is available via Cameo?
I'm unaware if Adrian Heath uses Cameo.
By the way, we'll talk about Reynoso in a second, but Adrian Heath went back the old bag of
Marlon
tricks.
Harrison's on there, so you've got your Minnesota love.
Is Robin Lode on there? Maybe we can play.
I do not believe so. And if he is, he's probably on the left side, not the right side.
All right. Let's talk Timbers. They won a rivalry match in an empty stadium. Of course, that's always weird, but big win for them, 2-1 against the Sounders. Felipe Mora with the game-winning goal. But the big news here and what we're going to focus on has to be their own MVP candidate, the guy that basically drove them all the way to that MLS's back tournament title, Sebastian Blanco. Like 30 seconds into this game, the moment that you hate to see, the moment that I personally refuse now to even... I won't watch these injury replays. I can't do it. But all the tweets coming through my timeline told me it didn't look good. It was his knee, his right knee, says Timbers head coach Giovanni Savarese. They're going to evaluate everything, of course, but there is no update as of this Tuesday, September 8th, as to what's going on with Sebastian Blanco. One, get well soon, Seba. You are an amazing player. It's a joy to watch you play this game in our league. Two, what now for the Timbers, guys? I mean, what do you think, Doyle? Like, what do they do going forward? They have a lot of pieces, but this was the piece.
Yeah, he was their best player. Like he has over the past 12 to 18 months kind of eclipsed Diego Valeri and Diego Chara, and there is no like for like replacing that. But Diego Valeri is still there, and Diego Valeri still keeps showing at age 34, 35 years old that he is still great. They have in Eric Williamson, a young player who came through Timbers 2 and has elevated his game to the point where he has become man of the match caliber in a Cascadia Cup game on the road against Seattle. He was just...
Can we talk about the finish? I want, Kaylin, your perspective on this finish, because when I watch that goal, the whole buildup is amazing, but Eric Williamson in the box, the calm, the technique, the moment... It just like felt like a cherry on top of everything he's done in the last 3 or 4 months of just like, I'm here, baby. I'm not going anywhere. It was just class.
Well, I'm watching the... Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, and the way it continues forward. But look, I'm watching all this and I'm like, this guy didn't just get this good overnight, right? Like, why hasn't he been playing? Where's this
That's
guy?
I've been saying.
Yeah, you're like, I mean, I haven't been watching Timbers too, but I just I'm having trouble believing that this just came out of thin air, right? Similar to a, kind of like a Mark Anthony Kay revelation for the team. And so, yeah, he was fantastic. And that's going to help. But there is no replacement for Blanco, right? Valeri can step up and you can maybe shift things around. You bring in Nishkoda and maybe Jeremy has to kind of play. Maybe you change formations. Can they play together? Does Jeremy get pushed aside out wide a little bit as they've done kind of late in matches at times? But it's just so, and I wouldn't even just say it's just about Blanco's play. That's a big part of it. But I think his personality, he gives the team, he's often the one that's getting in the face of the ref, the other team, the referees. He gives them like, I mean, Chara's like back there doing the kind of dirty work on the side, but it's like, he has this kind of energy about him that has been able to kind of, set the tone for the team. And when you have a player like that, who's not only your best player, but also setting the tone in matches, I think that's something that's going to be really missed. So, but yeah, Williamson, he's a baller.
Luis Mabiala also went out in this game, which is big for them in two. But I just think, similar to what we were talking about with the Galaxy a little bit ago, I think the soccer ideas are there in Portland that weren't there before. And so I'm not as worried as I would be last year. Last year was like, if they can get a clean sheet, maybe Blanco can break through. I think there's a belief in the unit. I think Gio Savarese trusts the guys a little bit more now to try different things, to play. It's not just going to be get the fullbacks high and whip crosses into Nishkoda or Mora or whoever's in there. It'll be a lot in transition, less possession because they don't have anyone that can break anything down. But there's still, to Doyle's point about Valeri, and I think the way Williamson fits in and what Abobasi can do, and maybe Jimmy Chara, if he's healthy, there's a lot of talent in transition, and this is, can be a team that can still contend at the top of the Western Conference.
How do they set up? Like, I know sometimes coaches talk to us and like, hey, get out of the formational, like, dogmatic side that sometimes it can be easy to get to when you discuss this stuff, but like, what does that look like?
Low block, banks of four. Probably, as Kalen said, Abobasi probably goes off to one of the wings, and hopefully Jimmy Chara will be able to get healthy and get on the field and start being a difference maker. And then you give Valeri a free roll, completely free roll underneath whichever the center four is, whether it's Nishkoda or Mora, ends up on the field. And Valeri's always, like, since he arrived in 2013, he has always been one of the best player makers in the league, but he is an order of magnitude better when playing on the counter than he has ever been playing in possession. So they're going to go back to being a counter-attacking team now. I think their ceiling's a little lower because we saw, especially against NYCFC in the MLS's back tournament, when they had Blanco as the 10, they were able to use possession to take teams apart. I question whether or not they'll be able to do that. But this is what happens in our game of ours. Injuries happen. You have to be able to adjust. And the thing is, like you said, David, they have a lot of talent. There should be a lot more confidence in their ability to adjust and still be a team that competes at or near the top of the West than there ever was last year.
Speaking of talent, Dynamo, last couple of years, we know who they've been reliant on as far as getting results, getting goals. It was the Morrow show, it was the Albert Elise show, and it kind of feels like that's not the case anymore. Big win against Sporting Kansas City, 2-1. This feels like when we didn't know what the Tab Ramos era was going to be. This was going to be his first professional head coaching job. This feels like a good data point if you're a Dynamo fan right now, Doyle. Three straight wins, but not just three straight wins. It goes back to what we're saying with LA and Portland as well. Like, the ideas to get those wins, plus the depth they've developed in certain parts of the field, particularly in the attack for the Dynamo, it just feels like something different with a lot of the same guys.
It does. It does. And you know, they have Darwin Quintero playing at an MVP level for the past month and a half. He has just been spectacular. What's happened is Quintero is their playmaker. He's their number 10, but he's a left winger. So Tab has sacrificed a more creative player in central midfield in order to get not just Matias Vera, who's a very underrated ball-winning number six, but also Darwin Seren, who's playing the best soccer of his life, and Memo Rodriguez, who was a winger last year, into central midfield. So you have this really kind of like defensively robust central midfield that has allowed Quintero to be more of a pure playmaker. And then whether it's Elise or Nico Hansen, who's been very good at right winger, you have a guy who stretches the field both horizontally and vertically. And then they have, in Mauro Manotas, Christian Ramirez, and now Ariel Lassiter, they're three deep at center forward. So they have guys who, like, and none of those guys is like a top tier center forward in MLS, but all three look pretty good. So there's just this kind of chemistry in terms of how these guys are playing. But what has pushed it over the top now is that Rodriguez and Sarin aren't just being ball winners. They're guys who are being really smart about picking their spots to burst forward off the ball out of central midfield, specifically when Quintero's on the ball. These one or the other will suddenly be coming forward, and now Houston have an overload on one wing, or now Houston have someone kind of dragging the defense out of position and creating a little bit more room for the skilled players to operate. So it's very rapidly become one of the most diverse and effective attacks in the league. The question, though, is that, okay, is this an effect of playing Sporting Kansas City twice and a shorthanded Minnesota team once? Or is this something that is going to be sustainable over the longer haul? But either way, credit to Houston's scouting department and the data analytics department for doing the work to find guys like Nico Hansen, Memo Rodriguez, Ariel Lassiter, and bring them into the fold, because this team had no depth last year. If Elise and Manotas weren't hitting, then they were not going to even be in the game. This year, it's a much different story.
Just to double down on what Doyle said, and I know Kalen's talked about him in the past, but Memo's been such a huge part of this.
So smart.
He's so clean in possession as well. He doesn't lose it in bad spots, and he's able to get in into the box or get around the box and wait that moment on the ball to let the play develop and let those runners find their avenues. This is what they paid for in Tomas Martinez, and they had it in the academy and on their team in Memo Rodriguez. So it's a credit to him to be able to, like we saw with Latif, move from winger to central midfield, where there's a different level of pressure. There's a different level of problems if you lose the ball. But also, it's nice to see Houston finally do it. They went out and got a DP, and now they're getting the exact production from a kid who's from Houston.
By the
His versatility. Versatility for Memo is what makes him not just his quality, but that he can be used in different spots. And he was actually very good as the left winger and brought them a lot at times where maybe those other guys weren't, it was an off day for the other two. But Darwin, for me, has been one of the best in-league moves between last year to this year. And it was why I was so excited when it happened, because it just felt like, for whatever reason, in Minnesota, there were incredible moments. And then there were some moments where it was like just wasn't the same, or he wasn't on the pitch, or you were asking why he wasn't on the pitch. And when it was, maybe the pieces, his style of play wasn't exactly the way that Minnesota always wanted to, or they couldn't account for the way he wanted to play. And now when I look at it with Houston, I mean, he has been able. I remember the game actually last year where they played in the Open Cup against Houston. And he just gave Houston, he danced circles around that in that match. And sometimes those matches stick with people. But I think the way he fits with this team and is able to kind of like pick his head up, find the right ball, pick the right pass, and just play in that kind of open style. And he just looks so good. The best of Darwin makes MLS a better league. But to see it, how he fits with that group of guys, I mean, he has been incredible.
I hope it keeps going. I hope Tab kind of has a finger on the pulse of what Darwin needs. Yes, you're pointing. Kick childhood cancer. This was a really cool moment. The Dynamo wore jerseys on Saturday featuring the names of pediatric cancer patients. And of course, this is Kick Childhood Cancer Month. And if you use the hashtag, literally like the least effort you could possibly make, it's one tweet. Even if nobody sees it, $25 will still go to the Children's Oncology Group, thanks to Continental. Shout out to Continental for supporting us for all these years as well. But $25 up to $50,000. So send out a message of hope. Tell these kids you're thinking about them. Root for them. Give them some support. Send them a funny video, whatever it is. Use the hashtag Kick Childhood Cancer. That'll be a $25 donation. Thanks to Continental who's supporting this
I'm
month.
Tweet it right now. Thank you.
Go do it. Now let's rapid fire this so we can get to Paxton and Brendan Aaronson. Columbus Crew, one of the best starts in league history. 2 goals allowed through 10 games, 7 wins. Who wants to jump on this one? They do it again. FC Cincinnati, they don't score. It's been 5 games since they scored, so no surprise in a 3-0 win for the Crew, and hell is real. Who wants to explain the Crew and tell us whether it's real or not? Any?
From what I've seen, okay, and I've watched, I think, 8 of the games beginning to end, they're really disciplined. They have a very clear idea of their patterns of play in the final third. We saw it on that Jossie's first goal, Columbus' second goal, the way they all knew once the ball was pushed out to the wing, Jossie was going to flare, get the defender backpedaling, and then beat him to the front post. Like, this is rehearsed. This is a well-drilled team. I think Columbus fans should be happy about that. They've also played the weakest schedule in the league. The win over Philly was really nice. But they have also, I mean, they've played Cincinnati, it feels like, 15 times already.
I would just say, on top of that, to the point of Cincinnati wasn't bad at MLS's back, but they're a very specific team. They can't step high. They don't pressure you. And Columbus loves to have possession. They feel comfortable as they knock the ball around more and more. So not only have they played a team that can't score and isn't great, they've probably played a team that fits perfectly against their fundamentals.
Yeah. I think we're all high on Columbus, but we need to see them, you know, really put a comprehensive victory over someone besides Cincinnati. That Philly win last midweek was very good, and that's a positive data point, but there's a reason we were all singing their praises during, you know, in July during the MLS's back tournament. There's also a reason that they lost. There's a reason they weren't able to break down Minnesota in that game, and we need to see that happen against a higher quality.
Speaking of Minnesota, Manuel Reynoso with his first start for the Loons, a 4-0 win against Real Salt Lake, and if you read Doyle's column, you know that Freddie Juarez threw out something a little bit experimental. Dave, did you watch Reynoso's debut? What'd you think of him? I mean, he made the substitute appearance in a big loss midweek.
Yeah.
But this was really his chance to have a coming out party.
Yeah. And this was a bad RSL team. RSL, I think, has shown a good level of depth. This was beyond their depth, the amount that they tried to change this up. But you saw him play in as the 10 with Molino out left and Robin Lode out right, who got the 2 goals. And I think what you're going to see in Reynoso is a player who played out left in Boca at times, is now playing as the 10, wants to float that way, and a guy in Molino who wants to come inside and create opportunities. And so they were figuring each other out, and it wasn't perfect, but you saw the soccer ideas between Molino and Reynoso and how they're going to pick up similar areas and play off each other quick. And there's going to be some really cool combinations and things that they can do to create chances. At a minimum, Molino's a good creator in MLS. Robin Lode seems to be a decent finisher if he has people setting him up. And Reynoso will be a high-level creator. It's just more talent. They're going to be better no matter what if you add a player like this, but I think it could combine to be a really cool set.
I did enjoy Chase Gasper doing his best Marcelo impression flying down the left with the nice finish in the final third. Love that visual. Blas Matuidi made his debut for Inter Miami. How was he? Any thoughts, anybody? I watched a good chunk of this game and regretted it, to be honest with you. But Blas Matuidi had a different intensity to the way he wanted to push high and pressure at times than I've seen from that midfield so far. It didn't pay off. It was a scoreless draw with Nashville. Neither of these teams can finish. I guess I'll just do this one. I'm already doing it. Neither of these teams can finish. So whether it's Gonzalo Higuain, which they're saying could happen a ways down the line, because he's got to figure stuff out with Juve, and that buyout, the turn money, as we've said, is quite good, or someone else. You know, Rodolfo Pizarro should have won this game. He was staring at a big empty goal at the top of the 6 with the 1 time, and he put it over the top. But neither team can finish, but Blas Matuidi is going to make this thing a little bit more fast-paced. They're going to have a little bit more pace to what they're doing, both on the defensive side, which I think is important because I've been sitting back a lot, but also attacking. I think he'll recognize moments to push forward and help create something, which they might do, but they don't ever finish it.
So that was the thing that stood out to me. Like, you know, Blas Matuidi is going to be a different level defensively. He has been one of the best box-to-box midfielders, and especially in terms of initiating any sort of press over the past 10 years. But he was able to hit these third-line passes and find guys like Rodolfo Pizarro and Juan Agudelo in the pockets, in the playmaker positions. And while the finishing was obviously poor on the day and you want to see better from Carranza and Robinson, like Pizarro and Juan Agudelo are not playmakers. They're like the glaringly obvious, like if Bello Reynoso is in that position for Miami, like they win 3-0 because it's not just one or two chances. It's like six or seven if they're constantly getting the ball in that position to the point where your forwards can't miss. So I understand why, especially after a game like this where Robinson and Carranza had good chances and couldn't put them away, that the focus is going to be on a number nine. I still maintain this team needs a real number 10. Pizarro's a really good player. He's not that type of player. He's just not. And I think having Matt Tweedy on the field in this game only made it more clear.
Inter Miami still at the bottom of the East, Nashville below the playoff line. Obviously now Falcao is out in Turkey saying, hey, I want to come to Miami. These are my, it feels like it reminds me of my country, says Falcao. So everybody wants to come to Miami. We'll see what actually happens with them. Some news that we've saved to the end of the show somehow, because we already knew it was done. Pity Martinez headed to Saudi Arabia. Anybody see this announcement video? I mean, this was...
I glanced at it.
I will just say three words, briefcase of cash.
And then a firing briefcase with a uniform in it. That briefcase had fire,
name on the uniform, which I'm not sure that will actually be how they do it, but you never actually see Pity Martinez's face. It was bizarre, but apparently they're going after the Asian Champions League or Al-Nassr, and Pity Martinez is going to be a big part of it, and he's going to make a lot of money. So congratulations to him. More rumors around Ezequiel Barco. Now they're saying Sevilla, they're saying Fiorentina is back. I'm sure Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra are clapping their hands back behind the scenes saying, please, 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 give us some money, but we'll see what happens there. All right, we're going to go to an AT&T 5G call to the field. Two of the most promising talents in U.S. soccer, North American soccer. We've seen one week to week in MLS doing his thing, scored a banger this week, and that's Brennan Aaronson. His younger brother, Paxton Aaronson, is playing down in USL in the union system as well. They join us now. What's up, guys? How's it going?
It's going good.
How are you?
Good, good.
Thanks for having us. See?
Brothers just in sync talking at the same time. So let's have some fun here. And we'll start with this because we're talking about the next generation of players with Elite Pro development. And obviously, you guys are on that path, Bryn. We hear all the news about potentially a move overseas, but more importantly, in MLS right now, the Union are playing well and you're playing well. Paxton, yeah. Union 2, doing your thing. Already got a goal at 17. I saw you smack the crossbar this weekend. Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. A little bit of gravity, a little bit of top spin. Maybe next time that's top corner.
I know. Would have fell. Yeah, would have fell with a little bit more gravity.
All right, Brendan, take us back, man, to get on the path that you're on. When you think about how you got here, what were the moments in your mind that were the most important?
Yeah, I think for me, it was just the development of coming from my local club at Medford Soccer Club in Riau, New Jersey. Those top two things on my mind. And actually, Riau, New Jersey is going to be a part of the MLS is next now, which is a huge step for them as a club. My dad runs it, of course. And really after that, I think it was just joining the Union Academy at a very young age. I joined at 12 years old. I played for the Academy for, I think, probably 6 years. And then I made my way up to the Steel. And a huge part of that was moving from my regular high school to the YSC Academy, which is the Union school. I don't know if you guys have heard much about it.
Oh, yeah. Plenty.
Yeah. It's an unbelievable place to be. I think just like the teachers, the people there, it's a great place. And I think I developed so much there because you not only get school where they work around your schedule, you get soccer twice a day. And I think that was huge for me, being able to like go in the morning and work on stuff that I need to work on, like finishing or final ball or that kind of stuff. We all had that kind of stuff where we could ask a coach and then go do it, or lifting, anything like that. I think it was, the school is just a great place. And I think that's really helped me to where I am. And of course, the academy and the coaches there.
Paxton, how did you sort of view those steps that your brother was taking, and how did you internalize on your part of like, you know, I'm an older brother. I know my younger brother was like monkey see, monkey do. He wanted to do what I was doing. Was that where you were thinking like, okay, Brendan's blazing this path, I'm gonna be right behind you?
Yeah, I mean, watching him like kind of set the path, it obviously had like, it gave me hope because I was like, all right, like I see him doing it, so it was a clear vision for me. I was like, all right, now I can like really go after this. So he kind of set the pathway, and then me like saying like he made a mistake, me like knowing he did that and then fixing my way around it. So I give him a lot of credit for setting the path, and it kind of helped me out a lot.
I see a smirk there from Brendan when you said made a mistake, though, huh?
I mean, nah. Yeah, hey, he calls me out on stuff, and I'm always open ears to hear, because he does stuff where I'm like, oh my god, like, does that stuff in the game, like the, like he was talking about the crossbar. I'm like, that's unbelievable. So we learn from each other. It's like an open, very friendly relationship. We're really close. We've been best friends since forever now. So we have such a good relationship in that sense.
We talk about soccer culture in our country a lot, but sometimes I think that we should take it down a little bit and go inside families too. And obviously, as you said with your dad, this is a soccer family. Mm-hmm. Tell me, guys, what it was like growing up in your household, what the game meant to all of you, and how your family, your father, your mother, your whole family played this role in getting you where you're at today.
Yeah, Pax, you go first.
I mean, I just remember from a young age, like even when I was a baby, I would sit in my little like seat and the Premier League would always be on, like Arsenal, Liverpool. And there was this thing called the Premier League review show that was like at the end of every week, and it was all the goals. And I just remember that show, like, and I would just sit there and watch it for hours because I thought it was like the best show on. So our family is like very competitive and soccer was always around. So that's kind of how we got into it.
Is this a backyard battle thing? Like, do you have the facility in the backyard? You have the goals? Oh, yeah. You have like the chalk on the fins? How did you guys do this?
In our basement, we had an unfinished basement. So I think that like we used to put down this carpet, and me and my brother used to just do 1v1. On this tiny carpet, and we'd be down there for hours on top of hours during the winter time when we couldn't go outside. And that, like, through that and being outside and just doing everything competitively, I think that's what really set our relationship. And we've always wanted to do better than each other, like, but in a healthy way, you know what I mean? And I think that's really, really good to have someone that challenges you every single day, and you want to do better than. So I think that was kind of our relationship, and it still is to this day. Like, over the coronavirus break, I don't know if you guys have heard, I've said a lot in interviews and stuff like that, but me and my brother would go to a space that we knew no one was in, and we would play 1v1 and we'd do all these games, but everything was, I could score more than you could score more than me. Like, it was to a set number and we'd race to that. So I think just having the partner and going at it and being just competitive all the time is what really, really helped us in our development.
Paxton, what are you better at than your brother?
I mean, we are like similar in a lot of senses, but I just think that since I started at a younger age, I have like not as much experience, obviously, but I've been like worked with my dad and having my brother to always work with. So probably just like my like dribbling and moves, I think. I don't know. There's not like one thing that I'm specifically
better at. I'll say something
better
for him. I'll say something for him. I think his finishing, he's got a very, very good shot. Like, he hits the ball very clean. And I think that's something that he has a little bit over. I think that's what he has over me.
But when you guys think about this, go ahead, Paxton. I mean, you're about to reveal the big.
No, I was just going to say, because like finishing obviously is like a big thing, like when you get to the bigger stages. So again, I was just learning from Brendan when he wasn't like striking the balls cleanly. And my dad was like, all right, so you need to like perfect this. So over the break and any little chance I got with my coaches, I would always be doing practices like finishing, and with my dad I would just work on striking the ball. So I got really good at that.
Brendan, we've seen so much of you so far and it's been exciting, but Paxton, we're just starting to see you at the professional level. But I'm gonna start with you, Brendan, on this, because you mentioned it, you've said a lot about your brother. One of the quotes is he's going to be very special. Tell me about your brother as a player. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you think that he can accomplish, and obviously it sounds like you're a proud older bro.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a super proud older bro. Like he's a player. I'll describe him. He's a player that has very, very good feet in the final third. He's super calm on the ball, knows when to find the final pass, can shoot from almost anywhere where I've seen the first couple weeks. What else about him? He works very hard like I do. And I think that's what Paxton is. He's going to be a very, very good 10. And I see it. I'm seeing it develop in front of my eyes.
Paxton, I'll go the other way with you. What do you need to work on as you enter the pro game, as you sort of evaluate yourself and see the path you want to be on? What do you have to get better at?
I mean, always working on, I just think like the final pass, because it's so crucial when you get to the big stage. Like, say you're on a counter attack and you have to thread that ball through. So just like mastering and perfecting that ball is definitely going to be a big thing and a key thing to like work on in the future.
Do you feel like right now that there's a physical gap at the USL level that you have to overcome?
I mean, like going body to body, but I think my like quickness and like the ability to like not go into that many like tackles or like duels kind of helps me. So like the quickness definitely benefits me from getting out of those type of situations.
We'll wait for your brother to get back. I think he dropped out, but it's plenty of time to talk to you about your path now, because this is really what we're talking about when we talk about MLS Next, is going through the system and finding yourself in a position to have this professional foundation to take these next steps. So when you think about your next year, your next 2 years, when you look at Brendan's path, when you hear what the coaching staff at Union 2 and the Union are telling you, like, what are you taking in? What are you thinking? What goals are you setting for yourself? And how realistic do you feel those are right now?
I mean, obviously, like, the goals or, like, the thing on my mind is next season, just earning that starting spot for the Union, getting as much game experience, as much game time as possible, and just really setting myself to a high standard in the MLS. And then once I think I prove myself in the MLS and become, like, a starter for the Union, obviously, like, for every kid, like, the dream is to play in Europe for, like, any team. That's just like the goal and the motto over there. So obviously it would be like really cool and a big dream for me to go over and play in Europe, but short term and now I just really want to prove myself with the Union and get that starting spot next season.
All right, Brendan, on your side, you're a couple years ahead in this process, and now we're hearing Jim Curtin say things like, hey, we expect him, you know, it's when, not if, you go to Europe someday. Your performance is climbing. And I remember like year and a half, 2 years ago, maybe it was 22 under 22, you and I chatted, and the big question was final product. And now we're seeing the final product. When you think about the last 2 years for you, your development, and now where you're going after this, what stands out to you? What were the big changes? What were sort of the aha moments, if there were any?
Yeah.
And how does that apply to your play right now?
Yeah, I think right now I'm running off of something that I'm very confident. And I think that confidence for a player is huge. And I think going in every game, I'm having that kind of mentality of, I need to make a play, I need to make an assist, I need to make a goal. But I'm just kind of letting it happen. I'm not forcing it. It's almost like I'm not trying to do too much. I'm just letting the game kind of come to me almost. Because if you're forcing it too much, maybe you try to do too much and it hurts your team in a way. So I think it's just letting things happen and being patient. So I think that's been huge for me. And like I said, I wouldn't be able to do this without the team that I've had this year, and we've been doing really, really well. And the people around me, the staff who spend time with me after doing finishing, which I've been putting a lot of time into, and players too, they've been helping so much. Like Bedoya has been a huge one just because of that play. Like, we've been practicing that a lot recently against the Red Bulls. So I think it's everything combined. I think it's a really good atmosphere at the Union right now.
You said you got to be patient. How patient can you be with what you hope is the next step in your career? When you think about the possibility of going to Europe, what are sort of the things that you want to have checked off when you make a decision? Because it seems like it's going that way as to what club you end up with. What's important?
I think it's about just like, I think right now I'm focused on the Union and everything like that, but I think it's about finding what really fits me and where I want to be in the next coming years and making that right decision, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I think it's just finding the right spot. But like I said, I think that like for me right now, all my focus is on the Union, and I want to do as best I can here and keep progressing, because the more I progress, the better I'll be in the places that I hopefully go. So I think that's the next step for me.
Do you have people that you bounce ideas off of? Do you talk to Ale about his time over there? Do you have boys in Europe right now? I mean, there's so many youth national teamers and national teamers that are doing it over there. Do you talk to folks?
Yeah, I do. There's a few guys that I know from U23s, even the national team. And Bedoya and the guys on my team, I have Bedoya and Olsino, who have tons and tons of time that was spent over there. I mean, Ale was at Nantes, Olsino was at Shakhtar. Like, he played Champions League, played against Barcelona, all these top teams. So I think being able to talk to these guys and know how it is over there and figuring out what's going, like, all that kind of stuff, I think it's huge. And I think it's great to have that kind of thing in the background too.
Does it feel a little bit, you know, we've talked about your backgrounds and how you got here for both of you. Does it feel a little surreal to be having these conversations and have it be a very real thing? Like, 11-year-old you, maybe, you know, it's a dream, but it's still just a dream, right?
Yeah, I think just putting on the Union jersey, I think that was a dream that came true. I mean, I've been going to games since I was since 10 years old, started in 2010. So 10 years old. And I think that was the biggest thing in my life so far, was putting on that jersey for the first time, being able to rep the club that has showed me so much and has done so much for me. So I think that was the moment where I was like, wow, like it's really happening. And then everything has been going up from there since.
Paxton, I got to ask you, man. Your brother says you're a great 10. You're going to be a great 10. You say you want to get into that starting lineup for the Union. If you had to put out a lineup right now, who's playing the 10, Paxton? Is it you or your brother?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously going to choose myself. You got to be selfish in some ways.
Push me back.
What do you guys hope? What do you guys hope for the next couple of years? And what would you tell kids who are trying to do what you're doing?
I kind of want to speak about like the pathway again, like get into like a good club that like can trust you, like that you can trust. Like for me, it was the Philadelphia Union, and I've been there forever. And like the unique experience of me going to the school, like it's definitely like no other. Like I definitely benefited from it, like going to school and then to practice. And the teachers are so flexible. Like if I wanted to get extra shooting in, I could tell them, all right, I might have to leave class 10 minutes early. So it's just like getting the right fit in your club, the right coaches, and just having that flexibility.
Yeah, and for me, I think it's just finding a club in the MLS's next, say, and just from there, I think it's just working hard. And I think that's for any kid. I think just putting in more work than the other kids are doing. And that's something me and Paxton have done for a very long time. So I think that once you get into a club like this, I think it's all up to you and how hard you're going to work to make it to the next level. And anybody can do it at this rate because of what's going on right now with the MLS's next. You have MLS academies. And when these MLS academies scout these other teams that aren't MLS academies, there's so many pathways now that are, it's really awesome. It's taking the next step in the game.
We're happy to see you guys enjoying your success. Paxton, hopefully a little more gravity, a little topspin next time. Get the Galazzo. Yeah, good luck with you.
Yeah, get a little dip on it.
Yeah, yeah. And Brandon, of course, and you guys' quest for a trophy. I know that's what the club is going after right now. And then whatever your future ends up being, we'll be watching. We'll be rooting for you, all right?
Thank you so much. Yeah, have a good one.
All right, head over to MLSsoccer.com/MLSnext to see more about the, as they're saying, the new system for player development in the U.S. Brandon and Paxton, two big parts of that. Before we get out of here, guys, MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM. We got six games, as always, to choose. You got little side pieces on each. So 12 opportunities, a perfect ballot gets you a bunch of money. Let's talk Montreal-Toronto. That's the Wednesday game, so make sure you get your predictions in ASAP if you're listening to the show, 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus, over on TSN as well. What's going on with those standings, Dave? Because we're still – who wins the Canadian championship? That's what I want to know. Toronto FC just lost two straight, right?
Well, they wouldn't win the Canadian championship.
Well, you would get there and then have an opportunity to win. It's a good point. It's a good point.
With Pacific FC, who made the playoffs in the Island Games in his first year as coach. Let's go,
I should have known. If this was Pa Moduka related, I should have known.
Get jacked up. But Toronto's in first on 9 points. Montreal's in second on 6. Vancouver is in last on 3 points. They've all played different games because it's 2020 and nothing makes sense. Obviously, Vancouver getting the win last week. I believe if Toronto wins this game, they're sitting pretty. It's probably over. If Montreal wins this game, it's most likely that Montreal will get the results against Vancouver to get themselves into the Canadian championship.
I mean, who knows? Because Vancouver got the 3-2 win against Toronto. Like, didn't have shots, but scored the ones they did have. El Tanque, Lucas Cavallini with his first goal. All right, we need our picks here. Who you taking? We'll start with you, Kaylin. Montreal, Toronto. Who you want? Who you got?
I'm going to go Montreal. I think Toronto has been largely the best team in Canada, of course, throughout this season so far. But look, I think, you know, they showed they've got some weakness. And I think Montreal, you know, it's tough to play these teams over and over again. And so I'm going to say the bounce back effect, little motivation on Montreal side.
Hey, look, in Montreal have that like, we didn't want to play, you did, and we lost beef, you know? So Rudy Camacho came out, got the goal. We're not going to have a Alejandro Pozuelo and Pablo Piatti debacle at the PK spot, I expect. So that's why I'm going Toronto. I said a lot there to go with the Reds. I think they're just the better team. And two straight losses, Greg Vanney has a motivational point to stick with them. And they've got more talent. I think they get it done.
I think Toronto, just because of what it means. This is their last chance to get that result before they have to watch Vancouver, Montreal play. They know a spot at CCL is huge for this club. And you talk about the PK. Like, I think that was, to Kalen's point, a level of we've played these guys so many, everyone's
trying
so many
to entertain
times.
Themselves.
Let's do something fun. Let's keep ourselves motivated. This is your motivation right here. It's a chance to go to a final, basically, if you can get a win.
Yeah. I thought it was an homage to Henry. Him and Pires did
yeah.
that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was out of respect. Yeah.
And it was even worse when they tried it.
Yeah, so,
don't ever do that with your penalties. I have Toronto. I actually think they played well against Vancouver and really against Montreal last week. They just didn't execute. I think that you don't. I think they'll play well again, except I think this time they'll execute. And they did a better job, I thought, of defending that ball over the top to Romel Kyoto that had given them so much trouble in Orlando during the tournament.
All right, there you have it. MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM. Go get your picks in, maybe win some money. We're done here. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Get in the mailbag for Thursday's show. We will see you then. Have a great week, everybody.